Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and saying the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com. And we are going to take a look at some of the issues facing the state legislature as it winds down, or we think it's winding down, and we'll see how it winds down. That laugh belongs to Charles Robinson, political and business correspondent for Maryland Public Television, who covers Annapolis. Good to have you in the studio with us, Charles.
Always a pleasure.
I'm going to start off talking about a particular bill took place in Annapolis. This battle has been going on for years over the right of people who have been arrested to have lawyers at their initial bail hearing. And it has went through our high state court saying yes, which made the state powers crazy, as we found out from our Annapolis summit, when they said they were going to find ways to not go along with this radical court measure as they saw it. And then they produced a commission. A commission produced a report. The report was given to Annapolis, and it was immediately put in the drawer, and nobody talked about it. So we are going to talk about what is going on with that bill and more in this session. We are joined by Charles Robinson, as I said. We're also by phone. The Reverend Todd Yeary is with us, the senior pastor at Douglas Memorial Community Church here in Baltimore, who was on that commission. Reverend Yeary, welcome. Good to have you with us, Todd.
Good morning, my brother. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Oh, we're hanging in there. My daughter's going to college, so we're doing the new admit students thing today.
Ka-ching, ka-ching. And Doug Colbert's with us in the studio, professor of law at the University of Maryland, Carey School of Law. Good to have you in the studio, Doug.
Nice to be here, Mark.
And you all can join us at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, but please call if you can, 410-319-8888. So, Todd, you were on this commission. Can you give us a little backstory? What happened here?
Well, the backstory was after actually two reviews of Richmond. You have Richmond 1, Richmond 2. Governor O'Malley had first a task force and then a commission, which I served on, to reform the pretrial system in Maryland. The charge of that commission was to begin to set the framework for what was hoped to be the best pretrial framework in the country. And so various stakeholders, folks working within the system, folks from judiciary were in the conversation to talk about where some of these changes needed to be made. What came out of that was a report that largely focused on a couple of primary pieces. One was the use of risk assessment as part of the evaluative process, but also at the same time to look at other tools and resources to include looking at setting money conditions on release, which was a significant concern by some of the stakeholders, and then also to look at other factors to make sure that the reasonable assurance process of making sure that defendants show up for court and there wouldn't be any risk to the community were maintained. We published that report in December. Of course, shortly after that, the General Assembly started, and so there were a number of different bills that were just raised trying to not really address setting up the best system, but really trying to avoid paying the cost for counsel for indigent defendants. And so that's really the issue that we're wrestling with, is the state doesn't want to have to pay the bill. And so without having to put in a structure that causes them to use tools that they really don't want to use, how do we avoid having to provide counsel, take on this bill as part of the budgetary process to make sure that indigent persons have effective representation at the initial appearance before a commissioner.
So, Doug, before I get Charles, I want Charles to jump in about a second, but I wanted to ask you, I mean, you've been, for as long as I've known you, for the 22 years that I've been on the air, the very, very first appearance in this program was fighting for the right of people to have lawyers at bail. And then you won this case that you and your students took to the Court of Appeals here in Maryland, and now we're facing this. So your analysis of this.
Mark, it's been a struggle, and it continues to be a struggle to recognize equal justice rights of low-income working people and poor people. And this has been a very disappointing legislative session, but so have most of the legislative sessions since 1998 when we first appeared before House Judiciary. So what we're trying to do, Mark, what pretrial reform is about is not only guaranteeing that poor people get a fair shake and that working people get a fair shake, meaning that their freedom does not depend on how much money they have, because poor people don't have money. So when you set a money bail, you're basically sending them to jail. But the other piece of it is to save money, to save taxpayers' money. We spend so much money to keep people in jail before trial. And most of the people who are arrested, their cases get dropped. They don't get convicted. But they're in jail for not having a license, for marijuana, for stealing $5 or $10 item from Rite Aid. So what we do is we go there. And we thought we had it accomplished this year. We won a class action suit, and I should say by there were two wonderful pro bono lawyers from the Venable Law Firm who contributed so many hours. And the idea here is that decision then becomes a constitutional right. This session, the legislators moved to amend the Maryland Constitution to take poor people's constitutional right away. And that was only one of 11 bills that tried to increase the power of the bail bondsman and to make sure that we did not have implementation the way it should be. The commission that Todd Reverend Urey is referring to came out with 14 recommendations calling for the elimination of money bail, the elimination of bail bondsmen, and a pretrial system where people would get supervision, they'd get to programs, et cetera.
So let me just say that this speaks to me, Charles Robinson, of something I raised in this program a few weeks ago, which is the essence of power in Annapolis. I mean, two things. A, which is the power of whether it is police unions or bail bondsmen to kill legislation, despite what commissions say, despite what popular will might be, and the power of in some ways, I want to ask this question of these men after the session's over, if they will talk to us about the power of chairmen to take a bill like this one or others that they paid for a commission to come in and do the work, and then they go, okay, well, we don't like the conclusions commission, so we're going to put this in the drawer, shut it, and it's not coming up.
Right. Well, part of it is and I don't think anybody is under any illusions that, you know, there are forces, i.e. lobbyists, who get into the particulars of bills and how they're shaped and formed. Lobbyists will tell you in no uncertain terms that their job is to, one, advocate on behalf of their clients. I think they sometimes discount the fact that, well, we don't change legislation. We may suggest legislation that may be more in line with someone's particular thinking. But with that said, it is often very disheartening to see what I would call good public policy die the slow death. You refer to it as, you know, putting it in a never getting out of committee. That's one.
That was the euphemism for that, yes.
Or having it put in somebody's drawer and literally forgotten during a 90-day session where we're less than 3 days from it all coming to an end. But let me say this, that, you know, it's important that the electorate obviously put people in office not just to carry the weight of communities, but to sometimes bring the broader perspective of, you know, is it right? I mean, I always ask that simply, is it right? You know, not so much is it politically right, but is it right? Is it going to do good for the public? And I think sometimes, you know, those forces, mount, you know, strong objection, you know. The good attorney who's sitting in here with us, I remember those lawsuits when you brought all those lawsuits, and I said to myself, you know, this is good public policy. But people don't necessarily feel that way. Remind yourselves, you have people who are both public defenders as well as prosecutors as well as people who are defense attorneys on these committees. And, you know, I hate to say it, it reflects sometimes their thinking on how things should play itself out.
So, I mean, politically, what does this mean, Todd? I mean, you're sitting, and then we'll go back to Doug here. I mean, you spend a good bit of your early year winter from January to April on the floor, in the halls of Annapolis lobbying, right?
Well, I spend time advocating as
yes,
a political
right.
action chair for the NAACP.
You said it
lobbying,
better. Yes.
Lobbying is a legal category, and so I don't want to get anybody.
I got you. I understand.
Hair raised. But yeah, I spent a lot of time working with partners like Professor Colbert and other partners, ACLU, JLTF, trying to move forward comprehensive criminal justice reform, which has been long overdue, but it requires us to always be vigilant about some of the things that come up. We did see some early attempts at, and I think Professor Colbert mentioned about 11 different bills that were taking different approaches to try to address the effect of Richmond, but none more egregious in their potential impact than the notion of a constitutional amendment. And so it requires then, if the corporations and the interests have lobbyists, then the communities have to have advocates, and the advocates have to be engaged. Otherwise, you have a process that occurred like last week. So the bill gets raised on a Thursday, goes to Rules. Rules approves it so that it can get on the hearing schedule and judicial proceedings on Friday, which is highly unusual for Friday hearings generally. But then because of what Friday represented to people of faith across the country, now you have to make the adjustments to make sure that the people's voice is heard about a bill that could potentially impact them for generations. And so I think it warrants a closer analysis and a deeper commitment from all of us to make sure that we help our legislators do good public policy. And the only way we can do that is to make sure we stay engaged.
I think we're being very polite here, Mark. And I think, you know, Charles and Reverend Urey are much more eloquent than the situation calls for, because we're talking about money buying political influence. We're talking here about a constitutional right to freedom. There is no more human right that's more important than personal liberty. We're talking about denying people a lawyer, which is your only hope, really, for most people of getting out of jail. We're talking about not conditioning freedom on money. The person who has money should no more get out of jail because he can pay $100,000 than the poor person who can't afford $250. This money system is something that should come under public scrutiny. We can keep dancing around this thing, but the fact is that the bail bondsman and the insurance company wield tremendous influence in Annapolis, and there are very few champions of people's rights right now in Annapolis. So bills like this one, where we're talking about getting rid of one system of money and replacing it with another that would keep some people in jail, it would keep them in jail for public safety purposes. They could not buy their way out, but it would allow most people to be entitled to release, to the presumption of innocence, to going back to jobs and family and school, and not taking 30 or 45 days away from them, which people who have money won't even think about this. So we really have to get together as a community if we're ever to overcome the money interests in Annapolis.
Let me open the phones here and say it was very clear in the Annapolis summit we held in 2014 that as soon as I raised the issue of the court decision, that both then Governor Martin O'Malley and Senate President Mike Miller were vehemently opposed to this decision, calling it political, really disliking and showing dislike for the Chief Justice of the. He's not called Chief Justice. He's called
Chief Judge.
Chief Judge of our Court of Appeals.
Chief Judge Robert Bell. Yeah.
Robert Bell, and it was very clear that that's what motivated them to kind of push this. They thought it was a political bill by a chief judge, and they didn't agree with it, and they wanted. A lot of them have money from bail bondsmen and other forces, and that was very clear in the course of the conversation that we had that day. And so you could see the handwriting on the wall in many ways at that moment. And come back to us your thoughts now. 410-319-8888 is the number. A-Rod, you're on the air.
Hello.
Good morning, A-Rod.
Yes. My name's A-Roy Crowell, and thanks for taking my call. I've worked in that system for 27 years. And first of all, that system has a lot of problems. One thing, you know, I always wondered when I was working, out of all the qualified people in Baltimore City, why do you have to have a white director of the pretrial services program, and why do you have to have a white deputy director of the pretrial services program, you know, to administer this program? Now, the other thing, as far as Judge Bell, I know Judge Bell. I worked with him for years. He was a very astute, eloquent judge. Judge Bell really had his program together, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people were. They felt threatened by Judge Bell in a lot of ways. But I just have a few things, those things to toss up there. And, you know, just wonder, you know, what can be done to remedy these type of situations, especially in the criminal justice system altogether.
All right, thank you so much. Let me get another caller in here, then we'll come back for kind of some thoughts from my guests so we can go into the next segment. 410-319-8888. Chris, you're on the air.
Hey, Mark, it's Chris Floor. I really appreciate the program and all, you know, what's being discussed. I just wanted to make a comment about the actual hearing on last Friday, and that was of one of the Senate Judicial Committee members, Senator Jamie Raskin, and he asked the bill's sponsor if there had been any precedent for that body to overturn a constitutional right of the Court of Appeals had declared and recognized, and the senator had to indicate that he had no knowledge of such a thing happening. It's a really dangerous thing when we have a system of checks and balances here, and we have a Court of Appeals that recognizes a constitutional right, not a statutory right, but a constitutional right. And I certainly hope that, as far as I know, as of this morning, I don't believe that they had issued a determination whether it was favorable or unfavorable. But I certainly hope that anyone that's listening that is concerned about this issue reaches out to members of the Senate Judiciary Committee and urges them to return an unfavorable report. This is a really dangerous road to go down, and after all the work that Professor Colbert's done and others have done here to try to get basic fairness for poor folks, we'd really be taking a huge, huge step back by trying to do a constitutional amendment. And thanks.
Thank you, Chris. And we'll take a brief break and come back with our guests here so they can leap into this in the next another 15 minutes to kind of see where we are going and what all this means. As we go to break, we're hearing Can I Kick It by Tribe Called Quest.
Uh-oh.
Q-Tip of a Tribe Called Quest, born on this day in 1970. Happy birthday, Q-Tip. We'll be right back.
Can I kick it?
Yes, you can.
Can I kick it?
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. That's Maggot Brain by Funkadelic, featuring Eddie Hazel on guitar. During the recording, George Clinton, who was on LSD at the time, told Eddie Hazel to imagine he was told by his mother that his mother was dead and just found out it wasn't true. Eddie Hazel was born this day in 1950.
I used to hang out with these guys.
Good.
Seriously, they were fun.
Charles Robinson's with his political and business correspondent from Maryland Public Television who covers Annapolis, the Reverend Todd Geary, senior pastor at Douglas Memorial Church in Baltimore. And I was going to use the word lobbyist again, but that's not right, Todd.
I am the political action chair for the Maryland State Conference NAACP.
Much better said. And Doug Colbert, professor of law at the University of Maryland Carey School of Law. But let's talk about again about what this means and what's happening right now in the committee, and the, and from all three of you, your analysis of what the politics of this is at the moment. I'll let you start, Doug. We'll go around the room with Todd and close out with Charles. Is that okay?
Sure, that's fine.
See, I think, Mark, what I begin to understand is how important it is for the bail bondsman to continue being the key player in our pretrial justice system. If there was a constitutional amendment, even though that's a frightening thought, as Mr. Floor mentioned, it actually means that the public would examine the bail bond industry. It means that a largely unregulated industry would now be subject to public scrutiny. Do we want a private group of people to be deciding the issue of freedom? Do we want to have a money system that allows some people to get released while others stay in jail at taxpayer expense? And I don't think the bail bondsmen want that. I think these counter bills to the governor's commission are intended to force us to use our resources and energy to defeat bad legislation, and most of it will be defeated. But we use up all that energy as opposed to pushing forward a proactive agenda that a broad-based – the governor's commission is – a group that represents sheriffs and correction officers and prosecutors and judges. It is broad-based.
And bail bondsmen.
And bail bondsmen. And for these folks to come together by a majority, I mean, it was an overwhelming vote to get rid of money bail and replace it with an objective determination of whether you do represent a danger to others or whether you do represent a significant flight risk. Right now, judges and commissioners make these decisions on a subjective basis. They have certain information, but we would be able to take statistical data and the judge would be able to use it. Didn't have to accept it. You know, contrary to some of the arguments made by some legislators about turning it over to computers, we use data in a wise way. But if you, Judge Steiner, did not want to release someone, you're not subject to following it. The point is that we are now faced with defending a very bad legislation as opposed to asking why wasn't the commission's recommendations put before the legislative body where they could see all the good reforms that would have changed our system for the better.
Reverend Urey?
I think that, one, this brings to light that when you're dealing with systemic injustice, you got to make sure that you're aware of what's going on all fronts. So not only are we pushing back against constitutional amendments that infringe upon the rights of poor people to have access to counsel when they go before a commissioner, it has actually highlighted the difficulty of maintaining what is really kind of a unique system in and of itself, because it creates this kind of initial appearance that really isn't an initial appearance, as if it's not a critical phase. So it's very convoluted, very complicated, but yeah, we have to push back against it. But at the same time, we got to recognize that when we're looking at tort reform, when we're looking at decriminalizing certain offenses that got folks jammed up in the system in the first place, when we're looking at how we reset and reframe the conversation about how we deal with criminal justice overall, then we got to make sure. I hear Professor Kolber's point about we want to be proactive, but yeah, absolutely, we would want to be proactive, but the system has never been proactive about the rights of those that are really the most insignificant as the system sees it. So it's not going to all of a sudden become an altruistic system that's trying to do good for everybody. We've got to make sure that the most vulnerable that are impacted by what comes out of the General Assembly have a voice, because they're very often not invited to the meeting. They're very often not going to get the information when the decision's going to be made. We've got to make sure that we're there dealing with all of it all the time to make sure that we do not drop the ball and leave folks vulnerable to a system that is not in their best interest.
Mark, I want to go back to something that Professor Kohler talked about, and that is if we shine a light on this industry, we will find things we don't like. And I think one of those is this whole idea that it is a system that basically keeps felons kind of employed. And that, and it's not, you know, I think the bail bondsman will say, well, we have to have these people in order to make sure our bonds are, we collect on our bonds if someone skips bonds, and who else are we going to hire? I'm not saying that everyone is a felon, because you will have some police officers who dabble in this. But when you shine a light on it, I hate to tell you, it's very shady. And I'm being kind, as he said. The other part of it is that this was part of a series of issues this legislative session, and I know we're going to get into more of this legislative session. When you think about, we might get a bill today that will deal with police cameras. We did get a bill that hit the floor regarding the giving felons the right to get their to get their rights to vote back. But there is, I think a number of us know who are down there, is that the lobbying efforts against these kind of issues is fierce. Between the Fraternal Order of Police and prosecutors, they beat back a lot of what would be good public policy because I don't want to call it fear, but this what could go wrong type of attitude. And you don't want to know what's going to go wrong attitude that's down there. And so you always have to be a little bit, maybe I'm too cynical because I've seen what happens, but I'm also have a weirful eye about this kind of don't tell us what to do.
Mm-hmm. And this is where it seems to me, Mark, we have to call upon the Fourth Estate, the power of the media to do investigative journalism, to really tell the story of the bail bond industry. We have to call upon community, a community that's directly affected, to come forward in a coalition building way so that we're all working together. And then we have to call upon our students, because the young people, more than any other group in our society, have shown all the indications of working together and fighting for a better, more just system. And we've seen examples of that from lots of places, Ferguson and other places like that. So we have to call upon our resources. We may not have the money, but we do have the truth of the argument. We have the better of the argument. And now we have to find ways of speaking as one voice.
And again, I guess I go back to, in some ways, to kind of having watched Annapolis very closely for years and years and years and years on the air here for the last 22 years, but before that as a running political campaigns and doing other kinds of political work in this community throughout the 80s and stuff. I look at this, and the more I'm convinced that most, maybe the public understands it viscerally, but not really understanding the kind of power that exists in Annapolis. It's hard to budge and move. If Senate President Mike Miller, appoints a chair of a committee like this one, judiciary, at the last minute, and not appointing somebody who everybody thought was going to get the job for political reasons and monetary reasons of funding campaigns, then this is the kind of politics that goes on behind the scenes all the time that I think people are very leery of talking about or of kind of wrestling with, that has a lot to do with what gets heard and doesn't get heard in the committee. That means what does not get voted on by the larger assembly.
We also have to really have an honest conversation about race, and we have to have one about class, because right now the people who are getting the short end of everything are poor people and low-income people who are disproportionately African-American and Latino-American. And in order to make some appeal to the majority white community, these issues need to be presented. And that's about the only way I can think of overcoming the wealth and power that exists.
Let me talk about the two chairmen that you kind of...
Let me go back to Todd right after that.
Sure. And, Chairman Joseph Valerio, who has been a chair of the House Judiciary Committee, I can't even remember who was before him.
Right.
But, look, he's very, as I like to call it, he's very much matter of fact. He'll tell you, I'm not going to take this bill up. And, you know, there are, I mean, it could be worse. In other words, you give yourself a straw and, like, maybe, and then at the last minute it doesn't. No, he's pretty much matter of fact. Let me talk about Senator Robert Zirkin, because I've known him a number of years, and I've seen him move from the House to the Senate, and you know, his position, you know, he took over for the current Attorney General. And Zirkin has always been skeptical, and I think that was good for the system. He was chastised this year in the session for not working faster and getting bills by the president of the Senate. But, you know, you need people like that to balance, if you will, the powers that be versus the powers that don't have power. And I think, the advocate here would probably say it was probably a breath of fresh air to have somebody like Zirkin to at least be willing to hear what you had to say.
Charles, I have to just chime in here.
I do want to get back to Todd before we have to close out.
But
go ahead.
Merely to say that the ties between the people you're mentioning to the bail bond industry are longstanding, and they have been ever since they've been in office.
Mm-hmm. Reverend Urey?
Mark, I think we have to make sure that we keep this in a historical context. This is not some aberration that Maryland somehow operates against the interests of communities of color and poor people generally. That is kind of the national identity. And so there is no inconsistency there. We've got to go in realizing that warrants us being very vigilant as you all are going to continue the conversation about legislation on all fronts. We're pushing back against the extreme proposal because they really don't want to address the real issue, which is making sure that equal protection under law is maintained for every citizen in the state. That's the question. We've got to stay engaged. We've got to keep pushing back. Personalities are. The system is what it is. The president makes the appointments. We've got to deal with the chairs. Yes, they're cynical in some instances and others, but if we don't stay engaged, regardless of who's in the chair or who's making the appointments, then that's where you start having these last-minute things slip through. And then the next thing you know, it's law, and then you find yourself with a whole other set of difficulties that you've got to overcome.
So we will see where this all ends up in the next few days. I mean, clearly President Miller has been pushing this saying you have to come up with a solution, but I'm not sure what that means and where it's going to end up. But you all have been watching this very closely, so I'm not sure where it's going to end up.
Yeah, we're not privy to any of the behind-the-scenes conversations, Mark, and I don't think we can take everything at face value. There's a lot of conversations going on. I would point out that if people are interested in having a further conversation, we will be having a panel discussion next Saturday morning at Maryland Law School about bail and the denial of counsel and the badges and incidents of slavery. We're going to be talking about the 13th Amendment in the context of pretrial injustice.
Well,
Mark, let me just say that in the meantime, we also have to do a better job of educating our communities about what their rights are as the system exists right now. We've got a high waiver rate even under the new system of implementation post-Richmond, which is problematic. Folks who would have access to counsel are saying they don't want it. We've got to do a better job of making sure that they request counsel, get counsel engaged, so that they have better chances of limiting the restrictions on their liberty once they get to the commission. The other piece is if they want to see the pretrial commission report, just go to the Governor's Office of Crime Control and Prevention. The commission's report and all of the recommendations are there. Be familiar with them, because at the end of the day, anything that comes out of the legislature, you still have to ask yourself the question, will the governor sign it, even if it were to be proactive legislation? So we got to make sure we stay engaged with all of the parties, from the governor to the president to the speaker to the chairs, and even to the folks that sit on those committees that do the initial deliberation, so we can make sure that the rights of all people are protected.
All right. This, and I really appreciate this conversation, and the reason we're doing these particular topics is because they're not getting covered as deeply by the press as they need to be, and we're trying to bring this to the fore as opposed to the things like the arguments between the governor and legislature about whether or not they're going to sign the budget bill. And these things often get under the radar and not seen by most. And so Doug Hulbert, professor of law at the University of Maryland School of Law, always great to have you with us. I appreciate you.
Thank
taking
you,
the time
Mark.
Today.
We appreciate what you're doing here too,
and the work you do. And Reverend Todd Yeary, senior pastor, Douglas Memorial Church. I really appreciate the work you do in those in the halls of Annapolis, lobbying or not. You're doing a work that needs to get done down there.
I'm glad to do it, and you can send a contribution to Simone's college fund.
Yeah, but
you're a good uncle.
We all will, Reverend Yeary.
Then my wife's gonna know what happened to what's part of our college fund for my daughter Maisie.
And mine's in the first year at school.
No, here we go.
Y'all only got one. I got two.
Well, that'll be a show we're going to do after the fund drive, okay. Which is why college tuitions are so high.
Yes.
And we have some answers to that. Gentlemen, thank you so much. We'll be right back as we look at the right of felons to vote and more and the shield law in Annapolis. Stay with us. Don't go away. Mr. Robinson is in the seat.